Thank you, Ed. I don't hear chewing at all. That's great. Okay, we're going to talk about the evolution of the principles-based valuation system that state insurance regulators are in the process of implementing. Then I'll discuss a little bit about the legal framework, pre and post principles-based reserves, provide an update on the implementation, and then talk a little bit about the one of the components of the principles-based reserve, namely the scenario reserve. And then I'll close with a discussion on statistical agent framework, and we'll talk about why that's an important part of the principles-based valuation approach. There are several drivers that led to U.S. Insurance regulators adopting a principles-based approach to valuation. One, to I guess understand some of the impetus, it's probably fair that I should probably state the current formula-based system that's used in the U.S., and at least for life insurance reserves, the reserve at any time is equal to the present value of future guaranteed benefits minus the present value of future net premiums. And so those present values are calculated. There's two components or two variables that are input to that formula. One is a valuation interest rate, and the other is a valuation mortality table. And those mortality tables currently are industry experience-based tables that then have loading added to them for margins for adverse deviation. The valuation interest rate is currently a function of the Moody's seasoned corporate yields of bonds. The important point, I guess, to stress in the formula-based system is the reserve is set at issue, and the mortality table and valuation interest rates are locked in. And so when you issue a life insurance policy, you can, through the formula, crank out the reserve for each future policy year until the policy either matures or the individual dies. And so there's no current unlocking in the process. So as you might guess then, if you think about the formula reserve, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all type reserve that is uniform across the insurance industry. So if the product benefits or product guarantees were identical between two different companies, they would end up holding identical reserves. But as we all know, the risk profiles of various companies, i.e. the types of assets that they invest in, the type of underwriting that they have, it isn't necessarily that formula reserve isn't necessarily reflective of the risk profile of the company. And so we talk about potential weaknesses in the current formula-based system. Even though the reserve is set at a conservative level, there may be certain products that have evolved that have very complex benefits in them where that formula reserve may not be as conservative as we thought it was. For very simple type term insurance products, that conservative reserve ends up being overly conservative, and so we've seen the insurance industry try to come up with creative ways of packaging that reserve and putting the risk off into the financial markets to try to get some reserve relief. So again, those are just some things that have caused problems and the formula reserve. We've had actuarial guideline after actuarial guideline after actuarial guideline adopted by the state insurance regulators to try to address every new version or complex benefit that has developed, and the industry sells these complex benefits, and the formula doesn't directly address that. So we issue an actuarial guideline that interprets how the standard valuation law should apply to those complex benefits. So the one-size-fits-all we perceive as a weakness in the current system. And the other weakness in the current system is with a formula-based system and the reserves are set at issue, and you look at the operating results of an insurance company, you're always kind of looking at retrospectively or looking in the past. So, you know, the company files its new annual statement. We look at the operations to see if they made or lost money. And so the focus retrospectively is, well, what did happen? You know, and then we can try to explain why the operational earnings were what they were. But again, the reserve mechanism is fixed, and there isn't much you can do through the reserve mechanism. So that's a perceived weakness, and we want to put in a valuation system that focuses more on what could happen in the future as opposed to looking retrospectively as what did happen. So the principles-based approach to valuation will be prospective, and you'll see as we describe it in a little more detail that it focuses on what could happen to the operational earnings, given certain economic scenarios that might unfold. We believe that it's good public policy to implement this principles-based approach to reserves. If you right-size the reserves based on the risk characteristics of the product and of the company, how the company does its underwriting, then that should improve the price of the products, because obviously to the extent a reserve is way over-conservative, the consumer pays extra for holding that conservative reserve. But, of course, solvency is a balancing act, and we want to make sure there is an appropriate reserve that is held to ensure that all claims indeed are paid, but an overly conservative reserve would be at detriment to the policy through a higher price. So the reserve should be based on all the risks that are inherent in the contract and reflect the company's own risk profile, as opposed to as the industry average risk profile, which our formula-based system is built upon. And then lastly, the other impetus for moving to this approach is consistent with some of the international developments. You heard Senator Nelson open up this morning talking about regulation across the globe, and many of our very large insurance companies not only do business in the United States, but they do business in other countries. And for us to put a system on them that is quite different from a solvency system in another country could create unlevel playing fields across the globe and put U.S. carriers at a disadvantage. And so that was another drive to move to this more economic-type valuation. Mostly in Europe and other countries around the globe, they have a market-consistent valuation where they come up with a best estimate reserve and then add a margin to that. And this principles-based valuation approach is consistent with that. So let's move on to the existing legal framework. The standard valuation law, which is adopted in all 50 states, prescribes that formula-based valuation. It prescribes the valuation interest rate and the valuation mortality tables. In some areas of the law, that it defers to the state regulator to issue regulations that help amplify the law and clarify the law for certain products and lines of business. I've already mentioned the actuarial guidelines, which interpret the standard valuation law as they apply to some of these new benefits that have been created over the last 10 to 15 years, some of those benefits quite complex. And when I talk about those benefits, for example, variable annuities that have guaranteed death benefits or guaranteed accumulation benefits or guaranteed withdrawal benefits, guaranteed income benefits and the like, have become very complex. The industry has also developed indexed annuities. Equity indexed is a favorite benefit. And again, we had to address how those benefits would be valued under the standard valuation law. And we clarify that through actuarial guidelines. And then as in any legal system, case law in the court systems also help define the whole body of law. So the new legal framework is somewhat different. There will still be a standard valuation law, so we had to amend the law to allow for a principles-based system, and so that law currently is in the process of being adopted in the individual state legislatures, and I'll give an update on that shortly. But the law refers to a valuation manual, and that valuation manual contains all of the details around a principles-based valuation. And so as you might guess, that valuation manual is quite thick, and it is composed of various sections. But because the standard valuation law refers to the valuation manual, if we were to make updates to the valuation manual, that would be done through an NAIC process. And once we get the three-fourths majority of the NAIC to adopt the change to the valuation manual, then it immediately becomes law without having to go back to the individual state legislatures to get changes. And certainly the case law will still be a part of the new legal framework. So the standard valuation law was adopted by the NAIC in December of 2009. Work continued on the valuation manual, and the valuation manual was adopted in December 2012. So with the law and the manual now done, it could enter the state legislative adoption process. So the development phase of the principles-based system is done, and we're moving into the implementation phase. And so what does that implementation phase really consist of? Well, I'll talk a little bit about one of the changes in the NAIC structure to accommodate this implementation. I'll give you an update on what states have adopted the amendments to the standard valuation law. And then I'll talk a little bit about the scenario reserve, which may be a component in the principles-based valuation, but Dave Navy is going to go into much more depth on that, so I won't spend a lot of time on that. But I will close with a statistical agent framework. And then some of the other implementation issues Mike Berner is going to cover more in detail in his presentation. But obviously we have to develop education and training on this new methodology for insurance regulatory staff. We need to address the state regulatory resources that will be needed to implement this new principles-based valuation approach. There will be updates to the annual statement blanks, the financial analysis and examination handbooks, and ultimately the new principles-based valuation will be recommended as an accreditation standard and go to the accreditation committee. So here I'm just giving you an example of the NAIC structure change, and you see this group called the Principle-Based Reserving Implementation Task Force. That's an executive-level task force that was created to manage the remaining activities to get PBR fully implemented. Some of the other existing committees in the NAIC that will be involved in this process are the A Committee, which deals with life and annuity issues, the B Committee, which deals with health issues, the Financial Condition E Committee, which deals with blanks and accounting and risk-based capital and so forth. And then, of course, I mentioned that it'll be an accreditation process, so ultimately it will involve the F Committee as well. And I'll just mention that the Principles-Based Reserving Implementation Task Force is jointly chaired by the A Committee Chair and the E Committee Chair. So where is the state legislative adoption process? Well, 2013 was the first legislative year that the amendments to the standard valuation law and the valuation manual were considered for adoption. So seven states did introduce the amendments to the SVL, and seven states did adopt the legislative package, and by the package I mean the amendments to the standard valuation law as well as the valuation manual. There were three other states that considered it in 2013, but the legislature reached an end before the bill was passed. So we had three additional states, Connecticut, New Mexico, and Texas, introduce the amendments to the SVL, but they did not get any action taken. So let's talk a little bit about some high-level principles of a principles-based valuation methodology. Once it becomes operative, and Dave will talk or Mike will talk about the what it's going to take to make them operative, but once it becomes operative, it's going to apply to new business issued on and after the operative date of the standard valuation law. It's going to focus on all benefits in a contract and all material risks that are involved in the contract. It may incorporate the use of a financial model, and its focus is on tail risk, if any, in a particular product, and that tail risk will be a function of what we call a scenario reserve. And the metric used that is that function is what's called a conditional tail expectation metric. And again, Dave will talk a little bit more about that. An important thing, though, with the principles-based valuation, because we said it reflects the risk of a particular company's profile, to the extent the company has credible data. And credible just means it's a large enough volume of data such that it's statistically reliable. And so the principles-based valuation will let company use their own experience assumptions regarding mortality or lapses or company expenses and the like, provided that experience data is credible. And so I mention that here because I'm going to close with stat agent, and you'll see why a statistical agent is an important remaining implementation issue that the state insurance regulators have to deal with. And the methodology is going to require an anticipated experience assumption and then margins added to those assumptions for uncertainty.